From Treasure Publishing, Edge of Eternity, a novel by Randy Alcorn. Read by Roger Marsh and Phil Ross.
The storm crashed upon me. The road was mud, my feet indistinguishable from the swirling goo that sucked me downward. My body dripped like a deep gash in a dark cloud. Why did my right arm feel so heavy? My right temple ached from a pressure I couldn't explain. I sensed a cold eye staring at me, threatening me, pushing itself toward me. Where was I? What was happening? How did I get on this road alone, bareheaded in this awful tempest? I remembered driving to my mountain cabin, and then the rest is a blur. My knees quaked. I couldn't tell ground from sky, earth from heaven. Help me, God, help! Catching myself, I groaned. Might as well be talking to the Tooth Fairy. I heard a violent noise like a huge canvas tarp whipping in the wind. I looked over my shoulder, then drooped to the ground in frozen terror. The sound was the flapping of giant wings on a reptilian creature with flared claws. It looked like a dragon. No, a flying dinosaur, a pterodactyl with dead eyes and jagged teeth. It appeared too heavy to fly, but it did, and it was coming for me. I rose from the mud and ran with the wind, but the beating of those wings grew until it filled my ears. I felt the blast of the creature's hot breath. I smelled 1,000 matches lit at once. Sulfur. I flailed my arms and fell again into the mud as the monster swooped down. As I tensed, the beast brushed over me. Was it playing with me, terrorizing me before the kill? Those eyes, cold and brutal, shark eyes. The beast smirked. Did it take pleasure in my terror? I sensed intelligence far greater than mine, ancient and brooding. The thought of a calculating mind in something so grotesque sent an electric wave of terror through me. I stared into the swirling gray where it had vanished. Had I really seen it? I rose from my knees, willing them to be strong. I ran, my feet battling the mire. I had to find shelter. Behind me, I heard again the whipping tarp, louder and louder. In a heartbeat, the fiery breath fell on me again. I threw my arms over my head and felt daggers pierce me, claws penetrating the base of my neck, ripping through muscle and tendon, jerked off the ground. I screamed! The beast dropped me back into the mud, the echo of my cry disappearing into the storm. Up, up, I had to keep moving. As I fought through the storm, I reached my left hand inside my jacket and felt my flannel shirt now soaked in blood. My neck throbbed. With aching slowness, I turned my head each way. I saw the winged beast circling. It plummeted toward me like a rock from a cliff. I curled up, pressing my body against the muddy road. Just as it grazed my neck, I heard a terrifying roar. It came not from the flying beast, but from an immense dark shape prowling the ground, a brute I could barely see, a mass of fur blowing wildly in the wind. As its roar filled the air, the flying monster's head jerked back violently. It squawked fiercely as it spun away, choking and sputtering, cold horror in its eyes. I gasped for breath, feeling only a moment of relief. What foe could strike terror into a creature more dreadful than any I'd ever imagined? Would I rather face the flying beast or the prowling one? I pushed myself the remaining 30 feet to the rocky refuge. Just as I reached it, a burst of wind slammed me into the stone outcropping. Stunned, I fell, throwing out my arms. On the ground, my groping hands found a recess, a furrow in the base of the rock. Behind me, just a few feet away, I saw the shadowy image of the ground beast, its great head still roaring up at the sky. I reached farther into the recess, pulling my body, but was still exposed to the beast in elements. I lay flat on my face, embracing the stony ground. I tried to get a grip, to move myself further, but I couldn't. My body didn't work, but my mind did. I'm a realist, a skeptic, I reminded myself. The dinosaur couldn't be real. The prowling brute couldn't be real. When I opened my eyes, I found myself in damp darkness. I must have crawled farther than I thought, into a cave. I couldn't remember. I was spent, twisted, and lying in a heap, too sore to move. I reached into my jacket pocket, feeling for the box of matches I'd picked up at the cabin. I counted them and swore. Only four. Carefully, I struck one against the wet box three times, then once on the side of the cave, finally. A spark. I blew lightly on the flame, and it came to life. The back wall was only an arm's length away from me, while the cave's height was maybe 6 feet. I looked down and saw in the thin ash and dust a boot print larger than my own. Had I blacked out? Did someone pull me in here from the storm and the beast? A gust of wind forced its way into the cave, blowing out the match. I lit a second one and looked at the ground. The print had disappeared. I stared at where it had been just a moment before. Nothing. I must have imagined the print, or maybe it was my own. Yes, I'd pulled myself into this place. I'd rescued myself, like I'd always managed to do. I was alone. Nick Seagrave, alone, again. I heard footfalls and heavy breathing just outside. The ground beast was stalking me, so close I could feel its wet heat, smell its animal scent. It couldn't fit through the cave's mouth. Could it? I pushed myself to the back of the cave, but even then I was only 4 feet from the breathing. I heard sniffling now. Whatever it was, it had locked onto my scent. I couldn't stop shaking. Only my headache and the pain in my neck kept me from yielding entirely to the terror. The ground beast fell silent. After a long while, sitting against the cave wall, my back and legs cramped. I stretched them. Trying to find the least painful position, I curled up like an old soldier digging in for the night. When I awoke again, I sat up, blew on my fingers, took off my boots, and briskly rubbed my sore feet and my hands. The cave smelled like wet sneakers. I had the eerie feeling others had held up here. It was just too weird. I was Mr. Rational, the last guy to believe in alien abductions or the paranormal. Yet, here I was, living out my own episode of The Twilight Zone. I revisited my last memories, changing out of my suit at the office, then driving to the mountain cabin, then... Why can't I remember? I breathed deeply, trying to make myself relax in the darkness. I managed to doze off and on. Finally, I saw a faint light through the cave opening. Cautiously, I pulled myself toward it. The clouds had broken, and a hazy reddish moon peeked through. No. Wait. What was that? Another light? Lower in the sky? About half the size? A second moon? Impossible! I rubbed my eyelids, then blinked again at the moons. This attack on my sanity seemed more cruel than being pursued by the beasts. Seeing was believing, right? I'd always trusted my senses. But now, how could I? Had I lost my mind? Into the mental vacuum fell a tangled, tumbling mass of vivid memories. First came the morning I woke up to discover Marcy and the kids gone. It was as unthinkable as waking up now to find myself in a world with two moons. I relived the shock and anger I had felt as I read and reread her note, and the helplessness, which I hated most of all. 2 years later now, I could understand a little more why they left. My long hours, endless trips away, climbing the company ladder. I did it for Marcy, I always said. And when Amy and Brian came along, well, I did it for them too. But wouldn't I have done exactly the same if none of them had been there? And now they aren't. I saw myself sitting in that corner office, on top of the world. I was all the swagger you could stuff into a three-piece suit, a legend in my own mind, anyway. I reached the pinnacle of my career. Why had it looked so much better from below? I'd lost everything that mattered over the last 2 years. Now it was too late to chase dreams. Lying in the cave, I saw again the face engraved on the back of my eyelids. Leanne, my little Leanne, our 5-year-old, always 5. Her death 7 years ago shredded the last of my optimism. From that day, every cradle I saw swung above an empty grave. Every birth was the beginning of death, a cruelty I could no longer bear. Seeing her now in my mind's eye in wrenching, living color was a twisting knife in my heart. "Daddy," I heard her say. I felt her smooth cheek against mine. I smelled her baby powder softness. I swept away the warm streak on my face. Then came my father's wretched end in that nursing home 6 months later, when I could tolerate his empty suffering no longer, when I told the doctors to... And finally, my mother's agonizing death from cancer 3 years ago, one more outrage heaped on me by a senseless universe. I was alone in a cave, just as I'd been alone in a cabin. Wait, it started to come back. I'd been lying face down on the cot, wrestling, tortured by the same thoughts that suffocated me now. But I'd gotten up and walked out, and... What? Something hovered over the edges of my memory. What was it? In Nam, I thought I'd face the toughest obstacles life could muster. The last few years made Nam seem like kindergarten. I'd started believing I might be better off beneath the cold, dark ground on top. No! I was too angry to let death win. Not me. Not now. A second chance. Is that really too much to ask? But who could I ask? I'd always heard words about God spoken by that church full of hypocrites. But what did words matter? If there was a God, and I had no reason to think there was, he owed us an apology for a world of hurt. But I knew better than to expect an apology, or anything else, from God. If he expected me to come groveling to him, he'd better not hold his breath. Did you hear that? I screamed, jumping to my feet and hitting my head on the cave ceiling. As I stretched out my hands to keep from falling, my fingers brushed some indentations on the cave wall behind me. Hesitating, I carefully lit the last match. Rough letters were scratched on the wall. Three lines, one above the other, forming a triangle. Forward, red road, home. Be careful who you trust. They were in plain English, evidence that I wasn't on another planet after all. But who put them there? I touched every word with my forefinger. Then I flung the match away just as it burned me, and I sank down into the cold, damp darkness. The throb in my neck yanked me into consciousness. A reddish light from the cave's mouth blinded me. I pulled myself up, amazed I'd managed to sleep on that cold rock bed. Oh, I'd kill for a triple latte. I couldn't stay inside. The light was calling me, inviting me out to something better. I touched again the letters in that cryptic triangle. It wasn't a dream. But wait, I saw other inscriptions in the wall, a foot above the message. The delicate writing was exquisite. It seemed more like hieroglyphics than anything else human, but exotic and unfamiliar, like alien calligraphy. This wasn't any human language. And yet, what other languages were there but human ones? I noticed now there were also inscriptions below the English message. Why hadn't I seen them last night? Scrawled out on crooked and uneven lines, sprawled across the wall, this was yet another language. The writing was coarse and crude. I reached out to touch it, then felt a cold chill and backed away. I looked up and down from the elegant language to this one and began to see some similarities. They shared some of the same characters. I had the uneasy feeling that whoever or whatever had written the alien inscriptions might not be far away. If they returned, I didn't want to be there. On the floor at the far wall, at the bottom of an eerie shaft of light, I saw something. A dark green heap. I moved toward it, cautiously reaching out my hand. It was a backpack, with worn and faded leather straps and a battered frame. I emptied it, finding handfuls of dust, a dirty gray blanket, an old black plastic water bottle, and a bent rusty nail. Whose pack had this been? Why had he left it here? Could have used this blanket last night. I felt repulsed as I recalled the previous night's wallowing in emotion and defeat and regret. I pushed aside the thoughts of the creatures. I would not spend one more night, one more minute in this cave. If I had to fight my way out, that's what I'd do. I pushed out the backpack and crawled forward on my stomach through the mouth of the cave, out into the brilliance cast by a huge red sun.